My presentation today will be about NaviServer 5, which is also a presentation which I gave also more or less 1 year ago, but the NaviServer 5 of today is a different NaviServer than it was last year. And I have no intention here to going all of the things which might be new there, but just giving you a delta what happened in the last year. I mean, the goal of NaviServer 5 was to be TCL 9 compatible, and it is compatible. Although this is also a moving target. I mean, things are changing over in TCL, and it doesn't say that something which compiled against the current head branch in TCL works the same way today. I mean, many of the changes are very natural, but you need some kind of of updates there to keep track of what's going there. And as we speak today, it's compiling cleanly there also with TCL 9. And also from the regression test point of view, there on commits to the public repository of NaviServer is always running with various versions, including TCL, starting with TCL 8.6. We had recently also a request for running a regression test with TCL 8.5, but I have not added it yet, and still also with TCL 9. Therefore, this kind of release schedule is also somewhat infected with the TCL 9 disease. I mean, it's just to be compatible with the release, one has to have the release, therefore it is something where it is also opportunity for NaviServer to improve in the meantime. And I mean, the changes since last year, there were whatever, as you see here, 300 files changed and 16,000 differences. And what has changed there, what are the things which I wanted to highlight there is something like whatever, I think it's important to have containers aboard, whatever this means here, will come to this. Also, there's often questions coming up to why is this server instance growing over time and what can be done to this, and there are also some improvements in this way of getting easier means to track this. Also, coming from the TCL 9 side of handling large files, what happens if you upload files which are 10 gigabyte or 100 gigabyte large, what does it mean for the server, for the memory, and for the system? And also talking about Unix domain sockets and proxy servers and next steps. I mean, the first thing is NaviServer in a container. Why you want to use some kind of a container? I mean, I think everybody who worked with container knows it, but it's easier deployment, it's easier to test different binary versions against your installations there. And the goal was also to have not only there one installation out there, but also there one with Alpine and Debian Linux. We'll come to the details somewhat later. And also have binaries for common platforms, which means more or less Intel, or this AMD 64 and ARM 64. And the biggest challenge there actually is not building one container which does the right thing. There's no right thing. And there are many ways of how things have to be configured, because there are many components you want to have sometimes inside, outside, or whatever. And how to deal with this kind of complexity is something which was addressed there. And we have there actually there four basic containers there. It's just a basic NaviServer, just the bare metal undergrowths. Then there's something with Postgres and Oracle support. I mean, people running there with Postgres don't want to have the Oracle things included there, and vice versa. And I mean, if you load a binary, everything should be working out of the box, certainly. And there's also the question is how to combine this with OpenSES. And but it's just now the version that I have is just on the Postgres side. But the other side could also be added. But how does this structure work? I mean, there's always the basic operating system, then in the middle, it's either the Alpine or the Debian Bookworm Slim packages, and it's just the base image there. This is for NaviServer, this package, and the other ones have the base images pointing to NaviServer, and the OpenSES works on this. what does this mean at the end? I mean, there's a public repository there at Docker Hub having this repositories, and if you zoom now to just one of them, just the Navi server itself, it has there 9 tags. I mean, this means 9 different names under which you can download different kinds of binaries there, and you see there things actually every of these repositories has their 9 variants containing the latest. I mean, it's just if you don't want to specify anything, or the latest Bookworm and latest Alpine, and there's also older releases. This listing just shows here this 4.99.30, and there's also Bookworm and Alpine release and so on. Therefore, I mean, it just sums up. And also, it's just a feature of Docker Hub. They have a system called Docker Scout, and it tests for vulnerabilities. And it's actually not really testing the vulnerability of Navi server. We could do it as well, but mostly of the operating system components you're using. I mean, the container just pulls in everything which is needed for this certain kind of environment, and there are libraries coming from this. And here you see there on Alpine none found, and there you see just the right side is 35 minor complaints, which are coming actually from Bookworm. And this is a thing which I did, I think, yesterday, but just a few days ago, it looks different. And you see there are a couple of red things, these critical errors. And I mean, it's also some kind of a feature, which is, I think, quite important, because the bugs exist there, but they are not revealed. Once you know there's a bug, it will be attacked. That means if you have binaries, which are fine, certainly, some days later, people figure out your binaries you have there have problems. Therefore, it's also necessary, even if there's no change. I mean, you see the 4.99.30. I mean, Navi server didn't change anything, and suddenly it became from red to everything fine. I mean, it's just a story of the software software supply chains where you pull in multiple data and it might change, and also something which you have pulled in at one time might change over time and become vulnerable after some time. Therefore, it's a very nice service to figure out what's there. And you have the binaries. I mean, it's just the feature of this Docker is you have binaries. I mean, it's an advantage and a disadvantage. And if you look there afterwards at one of these tags, what's behind this, and for every of these tags, you have here also this AMD and the ARM binaries there, and you see them here is a Bookworm, and it's just the older slide with these vulnerabilities there. And I mean, one thing is also can be seen here. I mean, this footprint there of this binary is very small. I mean, it contains the operating system, Navi server, in this case, some external programs which are there, starting from shells and whatever. And therefore, it's quite impressive that you have here sizes for example, for the Alpine there, it's just 14 megabyte large. I mean, you download 14 megabyte and you're running the complete installation without having to do anything on your system. I mean, you have to have Docker running there, but that's all. And you have here also the data there of the various versions, and you see that they're getting larger depending on what's there. There's a Postgres version and Oracle version, and this is a compressed size, and here is the real size, not compressed, and this is more or less here. It is the latest Alpine there. It is what is 40 megabyte there is 53 megabyte, but still it's very small images. Therefore, there are many reasons to say, okay, Alpine is the way to go. Why you are caring about also the complexity of having the Debian working there? But there are a couple of things here which are somewhat restricting. I mean, one thing is Alpine is based on Moodle, which is a C library coming from the embedded world. I mean, it's cool stuff, great things, but it's not the common C library used everywhere else. I mean, it has some kind of, it's a small C library. It's just compressed, and it just has just the necessary things there. And many things are not so fine-tuned. I mean, there are many reports out there that it is slower for many reasons. And for example, it doesn't have certain things because they were not ported to Moodle. For example, tcmalloc, it's just a Google Perf Tools malloc library, which will also come later a little bit there, but it was not ported yet. I mean, there are projects porting it on the time, but it's not there already. And there's also from the initialization things, there are deficiencies. For example, comparison things with LC Collate is working differently, limited, whatever. And in some places you need Oracle client binaries, which you can't compile by yourself because it's coming from Oracle. And there are at least things which are there for multiple platforms, but also with AMD64, they don't work there. I mean, simply because they are built against the C library, having more symbols defined than the Moodle has. I mean, there are good reasons sometimes for not going this way. For some people, it's completely irrelevant. Sometimes it's useful. And I mean, also coming to containers, what is the problem there which has to be configured here? I mean, it's, you see here a couple of different kind of configurations you might want to run the server here. You might have something as a server, you have here outside is the host, and here is the container, and you might have there, for example, Navi server, the binary alone there, and have everything else there on your system. I mean, if you want to run your configuration with many different versions of Navi server, of Tickle, whatever, it's the way to go there. You have everything external. But sometimes you want to have some parts of this inside the container because you want to deploy it in your system. And sometimes it also should, for example, include the database in the container. You have want to just one thing and everything should be included there. And the way to go there is there more or less this Docker Compose, which allows you more or less to configure everything from top. And but it's you can define all of these variants there quite easily, but it also requires the underlying infrastructure to be configurable in a way how you can configure it via these Docker Compose files. I don't make there any kind of introduction there of how it works, but basically, it has shown to be very powerful and very useful, and there's a nice web-based tool, is called Portainer, to manage different configurations there of your Docker. And here you have a web editor which is activated here, and here you have there more or less the basic configuration data, and you can adjust this to your needs, starting from IP addresses and ports, and if you want to have ephemeral ports, we'll come to this later, and you want to use, for example, the Tickle malloc library or not, you can specify this in this environment just on one place, and you have 10 configurations, you just have 10 different of these things there, and what you see inside there is a Docker Compose file. You don't have to use the GUI, you can do this also by yourself, and you can have environment files, but here's one, I think, very convenient way of going it, and if you're going containerized, I would recommend to look at Portainer. There are also other products there out there. And also, if it comes to the server and also OpenSES, the question is always also networking challenges. I mean, often you have this so-called ephemeral ports. Ephemeral ports are very normal. If you have a browser connecting to a server, you're getting a temporary port, which is this ephemeral ports. But also for the servers, it's also convenient to have ephemeral ports, because if you have a site and you're running there 10 different servers, they have to use different ports. Therefore, using ephemeral ports makes it easier because you can start more and more of the servers and you get fresh ports. But you have to find what are the ports are and you need some kind of a port mapping. And this port mapping is here also shown here. I mean, this NSD server has their two more or less internal ports. One is for HTTPS and one is for HTTP, and they got ephemeral numbers which are there. Certainly, you can bind them to whatever you want in the Docker Compose file, but if you don't do it, you have it ephemeral. And this is more or less a mapping there. And also to understand somewhere how this address things working is, let's just put together one slide, and what is the challenge there? You have the request coming to Docker host with some host and some port number, and this is afterwards mapped somewhere to the internal world, and the internal world is in the Docker host. You have there multiple containers, And they are connected there via virtual bridge Docker Zero. And it's using here internal non-routable addresses, which is 172.17.0. This is a bridge, and there are the containers getting these IP addresses. That means the real IP address of all of these containers is something which you don't know and which more or less determines there automatically. But it also creates automatically a net table just for mapping addresses there, for mapping external addresses to the internal addresses there. And this is working perfectly fine. But there are certain situations, especially in some server configurations, where it's making trouble. For example, validation of host header fields. What is a trusted host header field? What can you accept there? I mean, you can accept everything, which is probably not a good idea if you have redirects to this host. Therefore, you have to validate it. But how do you know what's valid there? Because the container is hidden from the outside world as good as possible. Therefore, using the local IP addresses and configuration values doesn't help at all. You have to get it somehow differently. And also, sometimes you want to address the database running on the Docker host or in a different container. It's also something you have to address there somewhere, because all the database has different IP addresses and so on. And there's also for the cluster management, OpenSES, where you define a couple of things. You can add them dynamically. You have to tell other ones how are you reached, actually. And from internal, you have to figure out how is this request from outside coming to me, and you don't have the information there. Therefore, it's a challenge how to map this. And sometimes you want to run regression just internally. You don't want to leave the container. It's just like a regression test. Therefore, also for networking and configuration is some kind of challenges you have to deal with. But I mean, I don't go to the details, but it's something which caused changes all over the place, and there are some configurations which I think working quite well. There's always a question about memory growth. Why is a server growing, whatever? And you see here somewhere a server, you see here different weeks, and you see this is a pretty stable value here. But at the beginning, somewhere it grows, and then there's something happening, and it's releasing memory or not, and it's going on there. And in this case, it's in the range of 2 or 3 gigabytes from the NSD side there. And the question is, why is this happening like this? And where is the memory leak? And why does it happen there? And then on larger sites, sometimes the way we arrange it, talking about something like whatever 20, 24 gigabyte, or sometimes also I've seen sites with 100 gigabyte. I mean, it's something where you're interested in what's going on, because if you're running them in the cloud, it's costly and you need memory, and therefore it's the question what to do about this. And there are many reasons for this, starting from your configuration, how you have configured Navi Server, OpenSES. There's a cache growth thing. I mean, if you have a cache and we start, the cache is empty and you load things into the cache and you can configure all of the cache sizes, but it is some reason for memory growth, as I said, at the start time in some places. There are application leaks. I mean, it might be the case that the application allocates memory but doesn't free it, but this also happens on the tickle level. I mean, if you have tickle variables in a namespace there, they are not cleaned up after request. And if you have more and more of these values, there is just growth there. And there are certainly the C-level leaks from Navi Server and the modules, or also for Tickle. And it's something which we are trying to catch there strongly. And also the signs that is running stable there is a good sign that we have got all of the relevant things, at least for these sites. There are also reasons for coming from Tickle, this doubling space policy. I mean, if you have a variable with 1K and you add 1 byte to it, it just allocates twice the amount of money, just the memory, and it's getting from 1K to 2K, it doesn't matter. But if it goes from whatever, 1 gigabyte to 2 gigabyte, just by adding 1 byte, it's not so great. And if you're going then from whatever, 3 gigabyte to 6 gigabyte, you get a crash in Tickle 8. Therefore, it is certainly a reason, and these Tickle variables might survive quite long. I mean, it's just Tickle OBJs which are sitting there, and the value of the thing might be used in a variable, and therefore it is referenced and cannot be freed. But also, if it can be freed, it won't be freed often immediately. And depending on the operations, there might be many reason for this. And there's also another thing is the question about malloc implementation. I mean, how is the malloc implementation where you allocate memory dealing with the space and how it is more or less freeing space or not and how space consumes it. And then there is the answer, the question of memory fragmentation, also coming from a good deal from these malloc libraries, because you're getting chunks from memory here and there, and normally also the chunks are not getting as a small chunk, the operating system library getting larger chunks, and if you free stuff there, then you have the empty holes, and at the end, it's called this memory fragmentation. I'm missing here one slide. Oh, okay, I'll come to this later, I think, yeah. I come now to some other reasons here. It's just for the also from the application side or the Tickle side, and I've put out this example here because it's an interesting Tickle question for the whole Tickle community in some way, and it's just the background very shortly. It's just the multi-part form data, which is very normal if you upload files to your web server. You have the web form with a couple of variables, and you have an input file, and you have the file with a name. And the browser produces from this at the end here some kind of a file, which is a content, and it's called multipart form data. And all of the fields here are different blocks, and these blocks are separated by these boundaries. The boundaries defined here is just per the request, and one has to pass these files. And in Navi server, you have the choice to put it in memory or a file, a spool file. Why this? I mean, if somebody uploads, for example, 10 gigabyte and put it in memory, it's not so easy to work with this, and you have a memory bloat. Anyhow, you don't want to have 10 gigabyte because of a file upload in memory, or name it 50 gigabyte or whatever. I mean, it's just from a certain limit, it's better to go to the file and pass it from there. And there, in this area, there's a small, in this case, when it's the file spooled, the contents spooled to a file, it has here a code which is there passing this. It's really looking for a boundary. And what does it do? It just does it reads a line, trims it, and looks whether it starts with a boundary in the thing. And if you found the boundary, it just knows from here to here, this is the block, which is the content of the thing which was uploaded there. But this thing, this snippet has here, is a good reason for a memory bloat and also for crashes. And a small exercise, can you spot it? I mean, if you don't spot it immediately, it's not a big problem because, yeah?
Long lines.
Exactly, long lines. Exactly. I mean, over long lines means the problem is what happens if the distance between two new lines is larger than whatever, 2 gigabyte, 4 gigabyte, 8 gigabyte. And therefore, this gets is considered harmful. I mean, gets can be very dangerous if you let gets read over a file which might have long lines. And I mean, just for crashing. And also for memory bloat, I mean, you get the same problem as always, just you might also over allocate the thing that you loaded there. And therefore, it is actually the thing. And it is, the thing was unchanged there for 17 years. It's just from the blame there, it's just, it was running there nicely. But with Tickle 9, I was looking at some kind of old crashes and just tested this, where how does it work there with Tickle 9? I mean, it doesn't crash, but it bloats still. I mean, the problem is that the construct is very bad there. And the solution was there to have there a small function here. It's called NSFCCars, which is just like a grep. It just seeks in the file from a position until a string is showing up there. And by this, it's just the code is not much more complicated. One has there many features there. So memory bloat is gone. It's just using more or less no memory. It has leaves all this 4 gigabyte limit for Tickle 8, 6, and 9. And it is about 10 times faster here. You see here just the old code here versus the new code. This is always microseconds. And you see the factor here is just typically more than a factor of 10 faster by doing this. I mean, there are these kind of traps are everywhere, I mean, in the code, and also many of them are reasons for these things. And the other thing, as I mentioned already, is with this malloc stuff there is what is actually allocated there in detail. And what's new also in Navi Server is there's some board for getting memory statistics from TCmalloc, also from Google Performance Tools, the library thing. And you have the thing where you have a RSS size, a resident segment size of 2.7 gigabyte, and this breaks it down of what is used there, where does it come from. And it actually shows here the application side is 1.1 gigabyte, it's more or less than half of it. And there are, in this case, 700 megabyte, which are kept for reuse. But you can free them. I mean, also with this TCmalloc, you can say, please empty your cache. It's just a call over the API. You can do it at any place. And therefore, by this, you can really find very closely what's going on and just pinpoint problems there much easier than before, because before there was just you just had more or less a 2.7 gigabyte and you were saying, okay, it's growing or whatever, or it's shrinking. And some of the malloc libraries never shrink. I mean, also the standard tickle malloc doesn't shrink, it doesn't free memory. If it is allocated to this pool, it never frees it, but TCmalloc is there quite good. And I made an implementation comparison of these malloc libraries years ago, comparing there, I think, 5 different malloc versions with different configurations. And it was really revealing because there are really huge differences in terms of memory usage and also performance, how these libraries work. I mean, over the years, everything has become better, and one cannot use these numbers from these times for bear, because they might be a bit better now, but still, the differences are still quite large. But one can go into detail with this. The next point I want to just come up is there with Unix domain sockets. I mean, Unix domain sockets is there since ever in Unix, more or less. And why there might be use, I mean, it's just the Unix domain sockets can be used to communicate with the server. And it is can reduce network complexity because they are a file. And as a file, this file has Unix permissions. It's easier than handling many different ports, having there something like Unix permission systems, who can access this or not. And it has a probably better performance. I mean, the question is, does it matter, is another question, depending on the thing. But it has low latency and high throughput. I mean, it's just because at the end, there's no network stack involved. You can have more or less using the file primitives, more or less. And I mean, the last motivation thing was a user request. I mean, Georg Lehner asked, how can I do this, more or less? And at this time, it was not there, but now it is there. And one has it now there on the server side, on the client side. I mean, you can talk to Navi server via Unix domain sockets, and you can use Navi server to talk to other servers over Unix domain sockets on the client side with this NSHTTP and CONTRAN. And I think I can skip this, but the basic idea is there, you specify in the address here, not an IP address or a domain name, but it's just starting with a slash, a socket, and if it's there, it's just used there. But it's the server side, and the client side has there some argument, it's called Unix socket, you can provide there, and it's just done similar, what is also curl is doing, and also the reverse proxy can be specified there as well. Coming to reverse proxy is also something where a couple of changes were happening there. And I mean, one can use Navi server as a reverse proxy, as a proxy for getting requests and redirects to a different web server. And it is, since ages, implemented as a Navi server module. And it's used there, for example, also on OpenSSorg to more or less interface to the FishEye server there. It's just one application where it gets the CVS statistics of commits and whatever from the server there. And therefore it's something there. And one thing which is nice on Navi server, you can specify there not only directories, but you have the full flexibility of defining, say, for example, I want to have every whatever PHP file to be taken from there, from a different site. And on the same directory, every whatever image file taken from there. You can redirect this quite freely into space using this UL space facilities of Navi server. And it more or less can be used there also on the level. And there's also now a new implementation there using this NSHTTP feature. And NSHTTP has also an advantage of using persistent connections. It is quite important if you could talk to a backend server and you have many requests there, that you keep the same connection and you're getting many, many requests and you just reuse one. You do not have to restart always a new connection there, and therefore it is by this better. And also you can use their Unix domain sockets, and also one can run in the meantime OpenACS behind Navi server with this reverse proxy module. That means it's just closing the thing up. Another, let's say, in this area, related thing is running Navi server behind the reverse proxy server. It's also running since many years, but the situation is getting more complex in the outside world because there are many web services out there, or web infrastructure, from Cloudflare to AWS, which are using by themselves proxy servers. And the challenge is at the end how to figure out from the client at the end the IP address. Who was making this request? And this IP address has many reasons why you want to have this. It's starting from geolocation purposes to debugging or for tracking back things. Because if you do not have some kind of a special handling there, you get every request there. The P of the web server is always the proxy server. If this is Navi server and this is something from Cloudflare, you have always the Cloudflare server there, which you do not want to have there. You want to have the right one. But getting the right one is something which is hacky in the web, in a way that the normal mechanism is there is a header field, is called X forwarded forward, or newer one forward, but 99% of the world using still this X forwarded forward. But this can be easily faked. I mean, it's just a header field having here the client and the proxy servers to the end. And how to deal with this? If the client at the very first beginning adds something like a non-routable address, a local host, something like this, as forwarded for, it doesn't make sense. As a server, you know it's coming from localhost. It is not a thing that you want. You want to figure out where it's coming from. Is this guy coming from China, Russia, North Korea, or is it somebody in your own department? Therefore, dealing with this was not really thought on this. And there's some kind of mechanisms there. There's a real IP extra add-on module. It's not standard included in Nginx, but you can use it there. And it has some kind of means of using this, and also Navi server has now more or less the same features. And in essence, I mean, the classical recommendation is the left one is the client, but if the client can set that as value, it's not trusted. Therefore, the thing is there going from right to left there and finding the last trusted proxy server. And you can do this now, and by specifying in the configuration and by this, you can know at least it's coming from this trusted proxy server at this place, and you have the real IP address of this one at the end if the end is at the end non-trusted. Last slide there. I mean, Navi Server 5 runs there fine with actual versions there, and it should be released when TCL 9 is released, and we have many other new features there which are not covered here. The last days, for example, Soran has added multi-thread support for NSHTTP. I mean, if you're running many, many, many of the NSHTTP requests in parallel, they're doing large backup systems there, and they're having thousands of requests parallel, then you also want to have multiple threads there from the client side handling this, and this is also now added there. It's just a long list of features there. And the next agenda is there also there to also add on TCL 9 also tags for the Docker images. But we have already now, I think, 56. It makes more or less twice the number, having all of them more or less with TCL 9 tags as well. I also have to invent a tagging scheme, how this should be done. Also important is the OpenACS 5.1 release. I mean, it's just a pending story. I mean, also similar to TCL 9. And then there's also porting the release afterwards there to TCL 9. And it's just showing here the size of the core packages, or just the thing, part of the release, I mean, which is I think 100 packages out of 300 of the OpenACS repository. And this is also about 300,000 lines of code. It is substantially larger than TickleLib. And I'm not sure how long it took Rolf to go through these files. It won't be very sure to do it. There are great cool tools coming out there, just a Tickle9 migration tool, which was more or less better released a couple of days ago. But as it is, it doesn't work for OpenACS. Why? Because, I mean, it looks for proc. I mean, it's very much configurable, but not on the places where we need it. I mean, it's just, it assumes proc, and proc has a clear signature, and it's different, the signature there on for the AD proc. Argument checking is different because we have the argument checking is a required argument, is a certain type, it doesn't know it. I mean, one has to extend or whatever, porting it to include there some configurations there and making more flexible. But it's some time there, and therefore it won't happen there in zero time. Probably also one approach is to simply run it and look how far it goes with the regression test. But at the end, I think it's also on the middle range, having this Nagelfar working also for Tickle, for OpenACS would be certainly a good idea. Okay, I think this was my last slide. Questions,
please.
Okay. The question is, you mentioned the Unix domain sockets.
Yeah.
The question is there any chance of Unix domain sockets coming back into Tickle Core?
Yes. There's always a chance.
Probably not just a question to you, but...
I mean, the way how the networking in AOL Server and Navi Server works is quite different. Not sure we have the slides. I mean, they have their different driver modules, and you can configure them. And there are driver modules there for plain HTTP, for HTTPS, for UDP, for ICMP, whatever. You have the many of these drivers, and you can load them, and then you can use them. Therefore, it's a pluggable system there where you get the data. I mean, from the effort of implementing it, I would say it's doable. At the end, it's a question of how you want to do it and how what kind of arguments you want to do there and so on. I mean, it's a programming exercise-wise, it's not very complex. I mean, it took me, I don't know, I was not 1 week or so, a couple of days to add this to Navi server. But it's also, you cannot generalize it because I know the structure very well and I know where to touch it, and therefore other people might have taken longer to implement this. But also we have there many gurus of networking from Tickle, therefore I'm looking for them, and therefore it's certainly always a hope. Here's a cool
support. Support for Unix domain socket is also part of my work in progress new socket implementation for Tickle Core. Integral part.
I mean, in essence, if you have a socket, the socket should work. I mean, should is a question. Is should work no matter whether you use a domain socket or a stream socket. Some things don't work. I mean, in some of the features, if you change blocking or whatever, it's differently. So, I mean, I think blocking is the same one. But some of the F controls don't work simply. But it's not so complicated. The question is, how much does it harm applications or documentation and so on?
Okay, another question.
What does ACS stand for?
ACS, CS is computer system, and Ars Digital, exactly. I think the original was coming from Ars Digital. I mean, there was, in the history of OpenACS, there was a foundation by a guy from the MIT, Phil Greenspan, who founded this Ars Digital Foundation, and it was a very booming company at this time, and they had boot camps all over the world. It was the Ars Digital Foundation, and this A from there is more or less leftover.
You are using your system every day, but you have a little problem to answer this question.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask many people of the TCL community what exactly stands TCL for. I mean, it's simple, but...
tool command language.
Exactly, very good. You passed this. But also managed somehow with the help to get it all together.
Are there any other questions? Okay, so...
Stefan?
Yes, Stefan?
So, we have a few active listeners on the Tickle chat, the Tickle's chat room. So there is Steve Lenders, Ashok Natbarkani, and Nathan Coulter. And there was a few comments on the presentation. So Ashok commented that there, in Tickle 9 there is no doubling policy anymore. There is still over-allocation, but no doubling policy anymore. I mean, strictly speaking. And that there is a lot of good stuff in AviServer that would deserve going into Tickle Core beyond the Unix socket example. But Nathan and Ashok mentioned the opportunity to add something called read-to to maybe overcome the limitations of gets, if I understood correctly. I think these are the most important comments.
I have exchanged a couple of mails with, two mails I think, with Ashok concerning this memory doubling stuff, and I have also made a couple of modifications to Tickle we are using there at university to improve there a little bit, and but Ashok at this time said that he's doing the most pending things now and it needs still some overwork there. But also reality, I mean, people using OpenACS and NaviServer are very conservative. I mean, I don't expect them to jump immediately on Tickle 9 and they will have real world problems there with this over-allocation, and the over-allocation won't disappear in there because it's also efficient. I mean, it's not so bad actually. I mean, it's also if doing benchmarks using different policies, you have always a trade-off. I mean, you have to do that, but still it can be improved, yeah.
Yes, I have another question. The migration tool by Ashok has two components. One is a static analyzer by Nagelfar and other tools, but the second one is a runtime one, which puts output, which basically changes some Tickle commands. So Ashok has changed some critical commands, and he monitors if they are called in the old way, I would say, and if there are any issues, it is put on standard error. Would that be usable with OpenACS, the second component?
We have here something also in OpenACS NaviServer, where you can trace all of the commands. I mean, you can just specify, I want to have all of the calls which are there, and you just have, I mean, we have the also with timing information and so on. I mean, it's just, it helps a lot there of digging down. And I mean, if you have the critical arguments, whatever, certainly it is not supported there, but I mean, the thing with is called with arguments which are problematic, like encoding, whatever, there are not so many places you can find this. Mm. Therefore, I think Nagelfar is also a good choice on this.
Okay. I want to thank Gustav for the great talk and all the work he's doing on that. Really great.